They say knowledge is power. But what if the person standing next to you already knows what you'll do before you do it? I was the youngest strategist in a Fortune 100 firm. I built influence systems, engineered leadership language, predicted market behavior like clockwork. Until she arrived, Celeste didn't break me. She studied me. I wasn't outplayed, I was invited. Now I'm telling my story, not to win, not to warn, but to confess. Because the scariest manipulators aren't strangers in the dark. They're the ones who praise you in public and dismantle you in private. This isn't just a cautionary tale. It's a dissection of trust, of power, of the hidden techniques used by everyday manipulators. If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. They say hindsight is 20/20. But in my case, hindsight arrived with a blade in its hand and a boardroom smile on its face. I was the youngest strategic director in our firm's history. I understood market psychology better than most understood their morning coffee. Cognitive bias, social engineering, behavioral psychology, these were tools, not theories. I'd mastered influence psychology like an art form. I was efficient, ethical, even until I met her. Celeste Farrow didn't come with red flags. No, she came with curated tales, carefully buried bylines, and a resume engineered for influence. She didn't enter rooms, she orchestrated them. She was the kind of woman you described in footnotes. Insightful perspectives, emotional clarity, ethical standards. The kind of woman executives fought to sit beside at strategy dinners, mistaking her presence for validation. She was brought in during a leadership shakeup, one of those soft but sudden restructures they label as organic evolution. In reality, it was a corporate purge, a mitigation technique dressed in pastel decks and HR smiles. I should have seen it coming. I was the one who designed the structure that enabled it. Her first move, flattering subtlety. She quoted one of my own strategy papers back to me in a meeting, not aggressively, but with admiration laced into her voice like silk. I should have heard the echo of manipulation in it, but my mind was too busy racing to accept the compliment. The next week, she invited me to an art exploration event, a gallery full of postmodern chaos and engineered symbolism. We talked about PS1 installations, the psychology of color, and the subtle language of body intelligence. I remember watching her gesture at a fragmented sculpture called Spectre of Control. She said, "Some people call it abstract. I call it how leadership really looks." My mistake wasn't in trusting her. My mistake was thinking I was immune, that I could sense manipulation the way a blind man senses silence. But she didn't use force. She used society manipulation, the quiet kind. Celeste didn't challenge me, she mirrored me. She became the idealized version of my own influence mastery. She dropped phrases like market dynamics, positive influence, and ethical leadership into casual conversation, words that felt tailor-made for me. Behind the scenes, though, she was aligning teams, redirecting project leads, isolating me in the name of strategic clarity. I didn't notice it because I was too focused on the surface, her warmth, her insight, the way she seemed to understand the deep emotions behind complex decisions. She introduced introspective conversations during our weekly syncs, brief but powerful dialogues that blurred personal and professional lines. One time, she leaned in after a meeting, lowered her voice and said, "You have power, but you hide behind precision. What are you afraid of losing?" I laughed it off, but it haunted me later that night, in the dark silence of my apartment. That's how everyday manipulators work, not by taking control, but by making you hand it over, piece by piece. It wasn't long before things started changing. She asked me to ghost review, a proposal going directly to the executive board. A 78-page document full of buried influence strategies, body language breakdowns, and subtle communication tools she claimed were part of a new initiative on mastering leadership. It was brilliant, untraceable, and I saw my own frameworks echoed in every paragraph. She credited me publicly, praised me in group calls, told everyone I was the architect behind the curtain. What she didn't say, couldn't say, was that I'd unknowingly signed off on my own marginalization. The document had restructured our reporting tree, and under that new tree, she was the root. I started noticing things, the server room access logs changing without notice, passwords being reset, project folders tagged with new categories I hadn't approved, whispered phrases about engineering stories and redesigning success that didn't trace back to me. And then came the offshore accounts. Not mine, hers. I found the breadcrumb trail accidentally while running an audit on contract vendors linked to a third-party influence consultancy. The firm was a shell, and the payments routed cleanly through Luxembourg and the Caymans. I confronted her, privately, calmly. She didn't flinch. She smiled, tilted her head, and said, "Do you want to bring down the empire we built together just because you're no longer the emperor?" It was the first time I saw it in her eyes, the mask drop. Behind it wasn't rage or fear. It was calculation. Cold. Surgical. A level of persuasion and planning I hadn't accounted for. That night, I didn't sleep. I sat in the dark, staring at the glow of my monitor, reading emails she'd blind copied, slipping through team chat logs, watching my influence decay in real time, not through sabotage but suggestion. She'd weaponized my own influence psychology against me. The following Monday, I was removed from project leadership. They framed it as creative reassignment, a chance to mentor the next generation. But I knew what it was. I was exiled with a handshake, a severance package, and the weight of shadowed truths. Everyday manipulators don't scream. They whisper. They smile while they position the blade. And I handed her the knife. There's a moment after betrayal where everything feels still, not calm but frozen. The illusion hasn't shattered yet. It's hovering, just before collapse, like glass midfall. That was me. Waiting. Watching. Stuck between denial and the shadowed secrets I'd just uncovered. I didn't leave the company immediately. That would have been too easy, too clean. Instead, I remained in the margins, reassigned to a dim, windowless floor jokingly called the server room, where forgotten architects of obsolete systems go to collect dust. My new role, legacy infrastructure optimization. Translation, rot quietly. They thought I'd disappear, fade. But while they planned my burial, I began an excavation. You don't strip a man of identity without expecting consequences. You especially don't do it to someone trained in behavioral psychology, work dynamics, and game mastering. I started collecting patterns. Not data, patterns. Tone shifts in emails. Password changes in odd intervals. Slack messages with surgical topics redirected mid-thread. Celeste had embedded a lattice of control beneath the architecture I once ruled. She didn't just climb the structure. She redesigned it. There was a phrase I kept hearing in closed-door meetings. Ethical marketing. Innocuous on the surface. But behind it, a content pipeline designed to shift narratives. White papers ghostwritten to reshape board perception. Executive summaries crafted with audio manipulation techniques. I found the metadata. The language was engineered. Visionary pivot. Ecosystem realignment. Leadership decentralization. All terms I'd once coined, now weaponized into erasure. Every term bled into the next. Cognitive techniques twisted into tools for psychological warfare. She had even begun integrating NLP techniques into her public briefings. Subtle tempo changes, suggestive inflections, layered framing. I watched it like a magician forced to sit front row at his own dissection. I saw my legacy become her illusion. And still, there was no anger. Only calculation. One night, while combing archived security footage, I found what I wasn't supposed to. A 4 a.m. clip of Celeste in the East Wing, seated alone in the old strategy war room. Lights dimmed, her reflection captured in the glass wall. She wasn't talking to herself. She was rehearsing. A script. My script. Word for word, my former keynote from the Lisbon Summit on Communication for Leaders and the Psychology of Ethical Decision-Making. She wasn't inspired by me. She was studying me. Reverse engineering me. Every gesture, every pause. She'd become fluent in my leadership language, so she could become the voice of influence in my absence. That's when I stopped collecting evidence. I started laying traps. I re-entered the company's archival system, a forgotten permissions portal linked to an old sandbox project we called X's and O's during a failed gamified leadership training initiative. No one remembered it, but I had root access. Inside, I coded a behavioral tracker, not for Celeste, but for those orbiting her. Group behavior mapping. Social dynamics analysis. Message replication timestamps. Access logs. I began to see it all. The inner circle wasn't being led. They were being manipulated through positive influence cloaked in curated psychology. Her weekly roundtables weren't meetings. They were performance labs. Employees were unknowingly part of live feedback loops, emotionally triggered through carefully placed questions. She applied cognitive behavior techniques drawn from market psychology, using internal surveys and leadership influence diagnostics to provoke desired reactions, tears, loyalty, rebellion. It was all orchestrated. She'd become a living case study in social manipulation. But still, no one saw her. And why would they? She wore the cloak of ethical standards, spoke of true leadership, wept at the quarterly town hall when talking about our culture. She cried for them, but not for me. And then I made my first real move. A podcast episode, anonymous, one voice, a simple narration titled, The Subtle Art of Losing Power. It was a dry, reflective takedown of influence psychology in modern corporate systems. It never mentioned her name. It didn't have to. It went viral in under a week. Reddit forums dissected it line by line. Analysts mistook it for a leaked McKinsey white paper. I watched the company panic, not because it was exposed, but because they had no control over who was listening. Celeste called me that night, first time in weeks. Her voice didn't crack, but it shifted, slightly, controlled but unsure. "You're trying to resurrect a ghost," she said. I smiled. "Maybe. Or maybe I'm just reminding people who built the cathedral before the fire." She didn't respond. Not at first. Then she whispered, "You really think you're the victim here, don't you?" "No," I said calmly. "I think we both were. But only one of us made it an art form." And I hung up. But even as I did, something felt off. Because in her silence, I realized she wasn't shaken. She was amused. I hadn't trapped her. I'd followed the path she left for me. And like a man returning to a chessboard five moves too late, I stared at the pieces and realized. I was never outplayed. I was invited. There's a difference between losing and realizing you were never playing your game. That was the sickness clawing at the back of my mind now. I wasn't unraveling because I was outwitted. I was unraveling because the rules I built were being used against me by someone who knew them better than I ever did, or maybe just respected them less. After the podcast hit, the firm went quiet. Not publicly, they posted their usual culture-laced garbage, pretending nothing had changed. But internally, I could feel the fracture lines forming. Executives were more reserved in meetings. Legal departments began requesting summaries of past decisions, ones I had signed. Celeste. She moved like nothing touched her. And maybe nothing could. I needed to strike deeper. Not with exposure, with disruption. That meant finding the ethical standard she hadn't faked. The one piece of real humanity in a labyrinth of persuasion methods, language tools, and market manipulation. I found it in an old investor pitch, one she delivered before she joined us. A boutique consultancy called Celestial Insights. The irony didn't escape me. But what caught my attention wasn't the pitch, it was the footnotes. She referenced a now-dissolved psychological research lab in Montreal, a place she claimed had inspired her shift into leadership development. I dug deeper. The lab was real. The work, focused on audio engineering and subconscious influence through tonal patterns, they called it layered auditory modulation. Essentially, audio manipulation through suggestion and tonal sequencing. It had been shut down after ethical complaints, and she had been part of the final study. Now it made sense. Her voice wasn't just persuasive. It was weaponized. That's how she'd done it. Embedded signals into our culture videos, our leadership seminars, even the internal voiceovers used in onboarding modules. Psychological principles infused into communication tools. Not illegal. Not traceable. Just devastating. It wasn't charisma. It was engineering. And suddenly, I knew how to reach her. I recorded a new podcast, but this time, I embedded my own signal. Black masked references. Cadences that triggered discomfort in trained listeners. Sentences that mirrored her original research, a language she couldn't ignore. I titled it, Buried Bylines, When Leadership is an Algorithm. I didn't mention her name, again, but I didn't have to. Within 48 hours, I got a private message. No text, just a location drop in one word. Talk. It was a jazz lounge in Midtown, soft lighting, a pianist who knew when to disappear. She was already there. Same black dress. Same effortless control. But something in her eyes had changed. She leaned in, the way she always did. Not threatening. Intimate. I listened, she said. I know, I replied. You used me. You trained me. Silence again. Then she said something I didn't expect. You were my control group. I froze. She continued, slowly, like uncoiling a wire. All those meetings, the scripts, the praise, it was all modeled. You were the constant. I built the experiment around you, and you never noticed. I wanted to laugh, to cry, but I didn't do either. I just said, why? Her eyes gleamed in the candlelight. Because I needed to know if emotional intelligence could be constructed, if empathy could be reverse engineered. You were the most emotionally aware strategist I'd ever seen, but you still saw everything as a system. You didn't break me, I said. You proved I was right. No, she whispered. I proved you were blind. And then she stood and left. No drama. No scene. Just a shadow retreating through the smoke. I sat there for a long time, mind racing, the thrill of the unknown gone. Only clarity remained, cold and surgical. She hadn't manipulated me. She had studied me. And now, I was obsolete. There's a kind of silence that follows true understanding. The silence of everything falling into place, too late to matter. After that night in the lounge, I withdrew completely. No more podcasts. No more traps. No retaliation. What could I do? I wasn't up against a fraud. I was up against something far more dangerous. A person who believed in her method. And worse, one who had proven it worked. I watched from a distance as Celeste expanded her reach. She launched Emotional Strategy Labs under the firm's new consulting wing, True Body Intelligence, they called it. Catchy. Scientific. Empty. The way all successful ideology starts. She was on panels now. Global summits. TEDx stages. She spoke about cognitive psychology, market emotions, body language, and communication for leaders. She sold tools and tactics packaged as healing. Transformation. Trust. But it was always control. She knew it. I knew it. The audience didn't. One night, I received a package. No return label. Just a flash drive, blood red, with a single word etched on the side. Listen. It was a recording, not of her, but of me. A compilation of audio snippets from board meetings, strategy sessions, elevator small talk. Each layered with subtle distortions. Edits I hadn't noticed. My voice, but twisted. My tone, but remixed. She'd been using me as a proof of concept. Testing how long a person can listen to their own voice before they stop recognizing it. I sat in the dark, that night. A piano track playing faintly in the background, something from a forgotten childhood memory. My mind racing. My sense of identity blurring. The line between self and suggestion crumbling beneath me. I wasn't sure if I wanted revenge, or to disappear. That's when I started writing this. Not to expose her, that time is gone. Not to clear my name, that never mattered. I'm writing because some of you out there believe you're immune. You think you're too smart, too aware, too trained in influence techniques or group dynamics to be touched. But the ones who get hit hardest are the ones who think they're holding the strings. Manipulation isn't a punch. It's a caress. It doesn't take, it offers. And everyday manipulators? They don't hide in shadows. They hide in meetings, emails, praise, touch, trust. They're not monsters. They're better. They're human. Like her. Like me. Like you.